Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Today on Route 51, the talk turns to the politics and policies under debate in the state legislature in Madison. With our guest for the next hour, Democratic Assemblywoman Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point and Republican Assemblyman Pat Snyder of Wausau. Katrina is now in her third term representing the 71st Assembly District. She's a member of the National Caucus of Environmental Legislators and is active in the Portage County Business Council and the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. She sits on the Joint Finance Committee, the Budget Committee, and the Committee on Rural Development and Mining. Pat Snyder is starting his first term representing the Wausau-based 85th Assembly District. He most recently worked in community outreach for Congressman Sean Duffy, and before that as a talk show host for WSAU Radio. He sits on the Committee on Aging and Long-Term Care, the Committee on Children and Families, the Committee on Jobs and the Economy, and the Committee on Mental Health. We've got a lot to talk about today, and we'd like to hear from you. If you've got a question for our guests, please give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air. Katrina Shankland and Pat Snyder, thank you so much for making your time available. You're kind of busy as the new session of the legislature gets underway. Pat, why don't we start with you?
Oh, sure. Well, thanks for having me.
You're a new state legislator. What are your impressions after just a few weeks on the job?
Well, first of all, and I'm sure others feel the same way, when you walk up to the Capitol, you still kind of pinch yourself, like thinking, like, wow, you know, I work here. This is such a feeling. So if you ever lose that feeling, that's probably time you need to get out of there. But a lot of things, and we were talking beforehand, it's like, making the transition from one level to another. Things are moving so fast right now, you just have to get into the pace and be able to have it slow down for you and listen to everybody, listen to all sides.
So the fast pace came as kind of a surprise to you?
Well, you know, yeah, because usually government you think slow. So yeah, the fast pace did come, but it's been fun. I've really enjoyed it a lot. Love hearing from not only colleagues but constituents.
Your committee assignments include aging and long-term care and mental health. Are those choices for you something that grew out of the volunteer work that you do here in Wausau for hospice?
Yeah, it has. In child and families, working as administrative review panel with the Department of Social Services, and seeing, you know, how the kids are affected, especially the ravages of drugs, mental health, with my daughter in school and some of the challenges they have from the traumatic environment some of these kids are coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And the aging and long-term care, yeah, hospice, but also in visiting with the different assisted living. And we are becoming an older county. So I think these are areas. Those three especially focus in on needs here in Marathon County.
Katrina Shankland, you're entering your third term. What would you like to see the legislature accomplish this year?
Well, I'm excited to get to work and serve my constituents again in central Wisconsin, and I really think we need to invest in public education at every level, not only from pre-K and 4K, but also our public schools, our technical colleges, and our universities. We've really seen what I would call a historic divestment, especially from our university system, and I'm hoping that we can work together to accomplish not only investing in our public education, but also our infrastructure, maintaining our roads and bridges, and building new ones as well.
You were the assistant minority leader. You had to step down from that because you're now on the Joint Finance Committee.
That's right. I'm really excited. I've always wanted to serve on the Budget Committee, and it's really an honor to serve, to be one of 16 members of the legislature, to have a crack at the budget, and really excited to get to work on that. I've been spending the last few weeks in different budget briefings with our nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau, and it's just a fascinating process to learn more in depth about how the state runs, essentially.
Republicans now control the governor's mansion, the assembly, and the Senate, and they increased their margins in both houses in the last election. As somebody who's in the minority, realistically, what can you accomplish?
I think it's really important to recognize that public opinion is the foremost priority in Wisconsin, and it should be for every legislator, regardless of party. So what I try to do is what I've always done, encourage people to speak up and use their voices. I'll give you an example. Medical marijuana was essentially dead on arrival 4 years ago in the Capitol. And in that time, because of public opinion, because of consistent polling that shows Wisconsinites favor either CBD oil or medical marijuana, we've moved forward even in places where I didn't expect, like the Senate Republican caucus seems to be a little more poised to act on CBD oil this session than last. And so while some people might not like that change can sometimes be incremental, I think it's important to recognize the only way to force change is to speak up, use your voice, and force your legislators to listen to you. So that's what I ask people to do, whether it's writing in, calling in, coming to the Capitol. But public opinion is the most important part of lawmaking, I think.
We've got a comment from Tony on Facebook. Let's see if I can read it here. Republicans are using the wrong word when they say they're informing or reforming the tax code. He prefers that they use the word change. Reform, Tony says, is misleading the public. Pat, we'll let you take that one.
Yeah, I could see him thinking that when we say reforming. But I think when we say reforming, I think we are just trying to say take it to the less complicated, to a little bit more friendly for not only the constituents, but also the business community and business environment. We want to see the people keep as much of their hard-earned money as we can, but also protect the services and things that the state is required to do. So, you know, change, I guess we could go and debate the word change, and change makes it sound like we want to take and not tax or tax more. Reform just means that we want to fine-tune it. At least that's the way I look at things.
Now, you two are state politicians. You're not federal ones, and we're going to spend the entire hour just about talking about state issues. But I'm not going to let the biggest political story of the week get by without asking you about it. What do you think of Donald Trump's first few days as president? Katrina, we'll start with you.
First, I'd like to respond to the tax question real quick, if that's all right. I would just say that I don't think it's reforming the tax code when it doesn't work for the average citizen. We just found out that about 78% of the manufacturing and agriculture tax credits went to people with more than $1 million, the top 2% of state filers, about $1.4 billion over the last few years. And that really isn't working for the average Joe. The top 13% of people in our state received two-thirds of a private tax, private tuition tax deduction. It was just revealed. So I think, you know, if we're going to reform the tax code, let's make it work for everyone. Let's make it work for the plumber down the street and the teacher in the school. As far as Donald Trump's first week in office, I just question where his leadership is when it comes to enforcing our Constitution, protecting our rights, and ensuring the liberties of all citizens. I really believe in freedom. And, you know, the censorship, government-led censorship, is truly should be a bipartisan issue where people speak out and say this is not okay.
Pat Snyder, same question. What about Donald Trump's first few days?
I think he's done something that a lot of politicians don't do, and in a hurry, live up to what they say in their campaign. Things he said he was going to do, he's doing, especially yesterday with the border, and not by implementing new laws, by just enforcing the constitutional laws that are there now. So I think when he has come out and said it, he has been very transparent. And so far, it seems at least he's refreshing and living up to what he said.
What do you think about his comment yesterday that torture works? And the reason I'm asking this is we've got a number of people who are serving overseas, men and women in the armed forces from central Wisconsin. Does a comment like that put them at risk if they're serving in Iraq? And are you worried that some of them might be asked to torture people if the president has that attitude?
Yeah, I guess I didn't hear that exact. I heard he was going to meet with his people to see the legality of what could happen. But you know, I don't know. That's a little above my – I don't like torture. I think it's wrong. But in the same sense, to protect American lives, human life, sometimes it gets nasty in there.
Katrina?
Well, Donald Trump's own appointees have spoken out in their nomination processes about torture, and I think that he needs to respect their experience. He needs to respect that they have much more knowledge on the topic, and he needs to listen to the American people on the issue.
Okay. Let's move on to state politics, which is why all three of us are here today. Let's take a listen to Governor Scott Walker's State of the State address, in which he said repeatedly that we are working and winning for Wisconsin.
Are we, you, me, us, are we better off than we were 6 years ago? The answer is a resounding yes. It may seem hard to believe now, but during the 4 years before we took office, Wisconsin had lost 133,000 jobs, and the unemployment rate peaked at 9.2%. When we first took office, the biggest challenge in our state was helping to create more jobs. Today, we've more than recovered the jobs that departed during the recession. Wages are up. More than 50,000 new businesses have been created. And our unemployment rate, well, it's down to 4.1%. In fact, our biggest challenge is not creating jobs, but finding people to fill them. We went from a focus on jobs, to talking about workforce. That will be my top priority for 2017 and beyond.
It's Governor Scott Walker in his State of the State address. Katrina Shankland, your reaction from the other side of the aisle.
So I think the question, are you better off than you were 6 years ago, is a really pertinent one. And for most people that I talk to, their wages have remained stagnant, while the cost of education, childcare, food, housing, energy have all gone up. And I think that we need to look at the facts. Wisconsin, according to Pew Charitable Trust, has ranked the last in the nation for middle class security. We have diminished as a middle class in Wisconsin more than any other state. We need to look at average wages. We need to look at the types of jobs that are being created. In many cases, they're very low wage jobs. And we need to make sure that the average income of your neighbor, of all of our neighbors, is rising, not just the 1%.
Pat Snyder, your reaction to the governor's address and also his agenda for Wisconsin.
Well, I do think that 6 years ago it was, where are the jobs? Where are the jobs? And now when, at least in Marathon County, talking with the business leaders, the manufacturers, they are looking for bodies to fill those jobs. And I think the better paying jobs are out there if we can get the training. And we can also get the education. But, you know, one of the scourges, I think, that are hurting us is really this drug problem. It just seems to be hampering individuals from accomplishing their goals. But so I think treatment, reaching out, I think what Senator Petrusky has done with bringing an NTC, the welding program, into the jail where 15 were enrolled and now 15 all have welding jobs. They get out of that cycle. They get on their feet and become great citizens and have much better lives. I think that's where the attention needs to go. I think wages, I agree with Katrina, they have been stale, but they've been stale nationwide. And I hope it kickstarts this whole, you know, Dow going over 20,000. I hope that energy and optimism can carry over to Wisconsin as well. And we talked earlier about the tax reforms. I hope those tax reforms mean that people will have businesses a little more money. They can invest more into their employees and raise their living.
If you just joined us, we're talking to Republican Assemblyman Pat Snyder of Wausau and Democratic Assemblywoman Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51. We want to hear from you. 1-800-780-9742. If you have questions for our guests, that's 1-800-780-9742. Or put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. I'll read it on the air. Let's listen to a portion now of the Democratic Party response to that State of the State. Here's Senate Minority Leader Jennifer Schilling. She represents the far western part of the state.
Living along the Wisconsin border, I've watched as our neighboring states have invested in their communities and lured our businesses and workers over to their states. While Governor Walker has experimented with tax breaks for the rich, deep cuts to schools, and costly borrowing for roads and bridges, other states have been investing in families and communities to encourage job growth. In Minnesota, they're helping families refinance student loan debt. They're increasing access to affordable health care, and they're raising their minimum wage to expand economic opportunities. As a result, Minnesota is drastically outperforming Wisconsin in terms of job creation, business climate, and family income. And because of their growth, Minnesota is looking at a $1.4 billion budget surplus, while Wisconsin faces a $700 million deficit.
So is Wisconsin lagging way behind Minnesota, which has a Democratic Party governor and a Democrat-controlled legislator, Pat Snyder?
I don't think we're lagging that far behind. You know, a lot of times numbers can be pulled out and used in the opportune way. Their health care system is in dire straits. The governor even said a few months ago how the Affordable Care Act might not be everything he thought it was in the beginning.
He said it might not be affordable anymore.
Yeah, and they are having trouble. I think they're down to one insurer for the state. And the taxes are a little bit higher, but you know what? Some of the things that are working for them, maybe their correction systems, maybe the way they fund their roads, because I do think we pay about $100,000 more per mile than Minnesota. Why not? You know, I'm willing to look at those ideas if it means saving us some money here in the state of Wisconsin. So I'm not going to get into saying that. Oh, I disagree. They're having success. If they are, how are they doing it? And if we can copy it, let's do it.
Katrina, Minnesota versus Wisconsin. We're not talking Vikings against Green Bay.
Oh, good. Or Badgers and Gophers, right?
Yeah, that's something we all can agree on there. Yeah, so I think it's important to look at Minnesota because they've been a tremendous success story. They've had several budget surpluses now, and the first surplus that they had, they immediately invested in their public school children. They also have invested in things like transportation infrastructure, high-speed rail, broadband, to a much greater extent, many more times than us. And their goal is actually to be in the top two states in the nation for broadband speed while we rank 49th. So we can learn a lot from our neighbors, and whether it's student loan refinancing or investing in broadband, we need to look to the states that are doing great things for their people on a budget, and Minnesota is a great example of that.
The governor says wages are up, 50,000 new businesses have been created, unemployment is down to 4.1%, taxes have been cut by $4.7 billion. Katrina, what's wrong with that?
Well, so first of all, low unemployment, that's a great thing. I'm glad that our unemployment rate is low, but we need to look at what kind of jobs and what kind of wages those people are in. We also need to look at the workforce shortage. You know, the wage growth is a market response to Wisconsin's labor shortage, and in many ways it's a good thing that wages are growing for some people, but it's only certain jobs. So we need to actually target the service industry jobs, for example. People have not gotten a raise in many, many years. Meanwhile, the cost of living is so much higher than it was the last time they did get a minimum wage increase. So there are very specific issues when it comes to wage growth in our state. And as Pat Snyder said, we need to look at the numbers holistically, not just cherry picked.
Katie Rosenberg, who's a Marathon County board member, put a Facebook post on the Route 51 page, and she says, as a local government peep, I would love to know what we can do to support our state-level officials so they will draft and pass a comprehensive transportation bill. These one-off wheel taxes are helping individual municipalities somewhat while continuing the state-level funding problem. Pat Snyder.
Yeah, good question, Katie, and one that will be addressed, I'm sure, a lot. The one thing that we had heard from the Fiscal Bureau last week was that the projected revenues for the state are going to be $400 million more than expected. And our caucus has come forward to address to put $300 million directly into the transportation fund to help that. We also, you know, when I – and maybe I disagree with the governor here, but when I was out earlier at the doors, when I'm talking to businesses now, they all are in favor of increased fuel tax if we need it to make sure the roads are done. You know, we had some training in the to learn a little bit about transportation over at the Fiscal Bureau. That was really eye-opening. The one thing that really bothers me – and I think about it, I consider it like wasted money, is paying the debt of transportation. 21 cents out of a dollar goes to just service the debt. Somehow we got to get rid of that, that all that money then can be more into transportation. So in any case, I hope the $300 million, but it still doesn't erase the debt or the projected what they need for the transportation fund. Believe it or not, the constituents and businesses that I've heard from would be in favor of that. Plus, they don't want tolls, what I've heard of. One other thing, if we would have continued the indexing, right now we're at 30 cents per gallon. We'd be about 37.9 right now. That would put us fourth highest in the nation. which I know a lot of the people that are thinking about taxes say, oh my gosh, fourth in the nation. But then you got to use the reverse side and see that our registration fees are one of the lowest in the nation. You go to our neighbors in Minnesota, they're paying over $500 or more for a new car registration. So
you would be in favor of raising the gas tax if it would help transportation?
If it would, yeah, because it goes directly to that. And I wouldn't, you know what? The indexing wasn't a bad thing, and it was a political football back then because the governor decided to take some of that money and move it out into other areas. And so when the other side, when the Republicans got power, they decided, okay, we're going to take the indexing out and vote for increases. But then the constitutional amendment came in saying that all transportation funds have to stay in that. Now you look back and you wish you had the indexing back.
Katrina, transportation money.
Well, I think Representative Snyder did a good job kind of laying out the facts that Legislative Fiscal Bureau has provided us with. I, too, remain extremely concerned about the not only the, I would call, insolvency of the transportation revenues, but also the over-reliance on bonding. And as a result, we have the highest amount of transportation debt service, $372.2 million. If we were to keep on going on this track, if that budget were to essentially do another borrow and not spend new dollars type budget, we'd see 25 cents on every dollar going just to debt service. Most households don't run that way. We should not run our state that way. I strongly agree with not preferring to borrow money over and over while delaying projects, which is the governor's MO. I think we need to look creatively at new solutions. And I regret that Secretary Gottlieb resigned because I really feel like he laid out some of the best options for us. He was a fantastic secretary. One of the things that he put on the table was either a gas tax, a modest gas tax increase, a modest registration fee increase, or a few other options. And I think that's what's on the table in the assembly. The Senate prefers to agree a little more with the governor. And so I think in the assembly, we have one of those rare moments to lead on an issue.
One other thing, Glenn, if I can mention, Katrina and I will hopefully be getting a little bit more clarity because there's an audit coming up of the DOT that should be released either later this month or early February. So that'll help us to see how the money is going and where to best put it.
We're talking state politics with Democratic Assemblywoman Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point and Republican Assemblyman Pat Snyder of Wausau. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're going to be getting to your phone calls at 1-800-780-9742. Right after this short break, here's some music by Loxley.
I'm coming.
Support for WPR comes from Sitka Salmon Shares, an Alaskan community-supported fishery with Wisconsin roots, offering sustainable Alaskan seafood from its family of fishermen. Details and delivery info at sitkasalmonshares.com. Support also comes from Christine Bremer Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-law.com.
We're back on Route 51 with Democratic Assemblywoman Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point and Republican Assemblyman Pat Snyder of Wausau. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air. Let's go to the phones right now. We have a phone call from Ned in Lake Dubay. Ned, you're on with Katrina Shankland and Pat Snyder.
Thank you. A moment ago, you were talking about good paying jobs, and that's very important. It's the main focus right now, rather than just jobs, because jobs have actually come back to a pretty reasonable level as far as the unemployment rate. We need to take some of that $400 million unexpected surplus in the state budget and put it back into the UW system. I agree that some of it needs to go into transportation, but not all of it. And some of it needs to go to the UW system because it's been cut so badly in recent years, in the last 6 years, that faculty morale is at a record low, and many faculty have left Wisconsin for better pay and benefits for jobs out of Wisconsin. And as far as Minnesota versus Wisconsin is concerned, the average person, the average adult in Minnesota earns about $5,000 to $6,000 more per year. And that might not seem by very much, but when you consider it's the average, not just one person, that's really significant. And that goes hand in hand with the fact that about 6% more Minnesotans than Wisconsinites have a bachelor's degree or higher. And so we need to invest in our education system, especially our university system. And we can see, as a good example, Minnesota's response to more investment in the university, which they've done. They didn't cut their budget in the University of Minnesota system as the University of Wisconsin system has been cut.
All right, Ned, we've got it. Thank you so much for your phone call. And I'm going to go to Katrina Shankland on this one. We're going to focus on higher education here because, of course, UW-Stevens Point is in your district. How do you feel about the cuts that have been made to UW-Stevens Point and other parts of the UW system? And what about the governor's latest proposal that we will not only continue a freeze with tuition, but actually cut tuition for higher education?
So I was just on campus this week talking with faculty and students who have done a fantastic job advocating for the Wisconsin idea, which is that, you know, the borders of campus are really fake borders because the whole state should benefit from every campus in the state. And that means our agriculture, who benefit from UW Extension, but also research at UW-Madison, for example. It means our aquaculture. It means every industry in Wisconsin, manufacturing. We all benefit from the UW, and the UW's role is to not only serve the public, but to serve the common good. And so we really do need to invest in the UW. In the past 6 years, the UW system has lost a total of $795 million in state aid. Not only that, we've lost tremendous faculty, mainly to the private sector, faculty in fields like chemistry, biology, you name it, business. They move to the private sector, and our students lose out. So do our businesses. I hear all the time, we just heard from Representative Snyder about the workforce shortage as well. If we're going to be serious about the workforce shortage, then we need to invest in our UW system and in our technical colleges because they are the best way to train a skilled workforce, period. So as far as a tuition cut and freeze, the governor in the past has only frozen tuition without funding that freeze. In effect, it amounted to a second cut. The tuition cut will be the same thing unless he funds it with state support. So I'm concerned about all the cuts that have been made in the past 6 years. We need to see a significant investment, and the people who will benefit most are everyone, because A, it affects our economy when students get out of school on time instead of being in bottlenecked courses for an extra semester or two. B, employers benefit tremendously from the skilled workforce. And C, all that extra income flowing through the economy benefits all of us.
And John on Facebook writes, I would like to thank Katrina for voting for the fund the freeze. The cuts to the UW, he says, has caused the budget for supplies to flatline for the last 10 years. So with more students in class and with the cost of lab supplies going up, this hurts the students. They can't do some of their basic lab training. Pat Snyder, do we need more money for the UW system? And then we'll go to K-12 education.
Sure.
As well.
Yes, I do believe that we need to get serious about the UW system. When I heard the governor mention the cut tuition in half, immediately, I thought about my conversation with Dr. Keith Montgomery. The UWMC campus, 40% of their base is relied on tuition. And to see that cut in half, where it's already down to bare minimum, if it's not funded in the backfill with from the general fund, then I would be very disappointed, and that'd be hard to support something like that. You know, I have a nephew who's looking for the business school, and he's narrowed it down to Wisconsin and Notre Dame. Now, Notre Dame his dad graduated from, but he also loves Madison a lot and the University of Wisconsin. I do want to invest more in that because the folks that go into the business schools, the folks that go into the medical field, the research field, I want them to be able to come out and begin businesses. continue to stay here in Wisconsin. Don't leave. But on the flip side of that, we do need to fund the UW system and also the technical colleges, as Katrina said. I also think that we need to go into the school systems, the middle schools, and actually try to reach out with all skill levels. You know, I'm thinking sometimes not everyone wants a four-year degree. Some, you know, want to work with their hands, be a carpenter, be a mason, be a welder. So I think we need to turn it back. You know, back when I was going to college, and even my kids, we always said that if you didn't get a four-year degree, you wouldn't be as successful as you could be. Well, I kind of want to go back and try to get the kids directed to their entrepreneurial desires. And if it means a four-year degree, by golly, we got to have the best resources for them to go. But in the same sense, if they want to leave high school and get into a manufacturing career and work at a line tech or something and make good money, by golly, there's nothing wrong with that either. So,
you ran a campaign talking about more funding for K through 12 education.
Yeah.
Will you vote for a budget if there's a cut in K through 12?
No.
You will not.
I will not vote for a budget that doesn't even have a substantial increase. I want to see an increase. And I tell you the reason why. And I believe Speaker Voss, and I hope this happens, is going to put a task force together to look at how the school formula is done. I went over to the Fiscal Bureau to learn about that. I'm still confused. Maybe Katrina's figured it out. I don't know. But the reason is some of the rural schools, their enrollment might be going down, but, you know, there's still a building there. There's still lights to put on. And we have to figure out a formula so that they aren't suffering. And not only that, but with a daughter who's a fourth grade teacher, there are kids that are having problems with stress from their environments at home. I want to make sure. I know some insurance handles counseling, but I also want to have hopefully some state aid to be able to catch the kids, to be able to get that counseling they need.
Before it becomes a more serious problem.
Absolutely. Right, Glenn.
Katrina Shanklin, K through 12 education.
So I think it's important to put this in context. Over the last three budgets since Governor Walker became governor and we had one party rule in Wisconsin, our public schools have lost more than $1 billion in state aid. Now, that's not acceptable. It's really damaging, not only to our rural public schools, but to our school children all over the state. I think the funding formula, first of all, is broken, doesn't work for everyone. But secondly, and most importantly, we need to invest in our public schools. They are the gateway to success, to our kids' futures. And if people are going to complain about the workforce shortage, they have to put their money where their mouth is and actually fund public education.
We're going to take another short break. We're talking state politics with Democratic Assemblywoman Katrina Shanklin of Stevens Point and Republican Assemblyman Pat Snyder of Wausau. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742 or put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. Marcia in Stevens Point has been waiting patiently. I'm going to ask you to wait patiently for another couple of minutes. We'll get to your call right after this break. But first, here's some music for Katrina Shanklin about her hometown.
When they play the polka from Stevens Point, how we laugh, how we dance, how we shout. Then we grab our partner by the hand and we skip and scamper about. Brewed in that city of wonderful water, but when they play the polka, we'll drink anything but water. Glasses to the sky, drink it down when they play that Stevens Point polka.
Support for WPR comes from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Dedicated to creating new ways to drive the Wisconsin economy forward, UW-Madison startup companies are committed to generating jobs. More at reinvestuw.org. Support also comes from attorneys Sturgill and Long, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and the Michigan Upper Peninsula. Information is at 888-613-0600.
We're back on Route 51 with Democratic Assemblywoman Katrina Shanklin of Stevens Point and Republican Assemblyman Pat Snyder of Wausau. I'm Glenn Moberg, and if you would like to join the conversation, the phone number is 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to the phones right now, and we have Marcia in Stevens Point, who's been waiting patiently. Marcia, you're on Route 51.
Thank you very much. I'm a member of a nonpartisan group, the Citizens Climate Lobby, where we work to educate legislators on the national level about the importance of addressing this issue on a bipartisan way, in a bipartisan way. But I'm wondering what you can recommend we do on the state or county or even city level when we have information coming that the DNR has had to take information from about climate change science off their website. Is there any way that we as citizens can should react to that to inform our state people that this is a serious issue and it is science, it is not to be refuted, it has been proven?
Marcia, thanks so much for the phone call. Katrina Shankland.
Well, I think that's a great question, and I should also point out that on the federal level, this is essentially happening too. On President Trump's inauguration day, all references to climate change as we know it were taken off the White House website. Here in Wisconsin, both the DNR and the Public Service Commission, which regulates our utilities in Wisconsin, took off references of climate change as well. This isn't a new thing. Unfortunately, when Governor Walker took office, he actually eliminated the Office of Energy Independence and did a bunch of other things related to renewable energy that I thought really move the ball backwards when it comes to mitigating the global effects of climate change. And this is about having an open and honest discussion about facts. Facts should not be considered at all part of a liberal bias or fake news. Facts are facts, period. Scientists are scientists, period. And I'm really concerned about the national as well as state trends of trying to silence scientists and intimidate them as well. I think the new rule regarding the EPA and their research, which is already peer-reviewed and actual science, having to be reviewed by partisan appointees really scares me. I don't think that government should ever be involved in censorship. I think that it's highly important, regardless of party, regardless of politics, that we listen to the facts and face them in the eye and take real action. And I really commend the Citizens Climate Lobby for the work that they're doing on a national bipartisan level to raise awareness. But how can we expect action from Congress and from our state legislatures if state agencies are silencing scientists? So I would encourage everyone who shares these concerns to ask their legislators to do something about it. I think we need a bill requiring the DNR to post information about climate change. And it should be evidence-based, which the DNR has moved away from recently because of partisan appointees.
Pat Snyder.
Well, Marcia, I actually am pretty good friends and call him a friend with Dan Barth of the Citizens Climate Lobby right here in this area. I got to know him well and met with him at least four times a year as outreach director for Congressman Duffy. And the fee and dividend has been looked at a lot and explored on the federal side of things. You know, years ago when I did some more research, the highest level of CO2 in the Earth happened actually when we had the glaciers, when they go back and look at the ice cores. And what I want to do is be able to make sure that we keep this Earth healthy, but do it in a way that we're not raising the fuel prices, raising the heating costs, the air conditioning costs, stopping the job growth or manufacturing growth. It doesn't mean that we have to totally shut down the other side, but in the same sense, I do think we need to look at the numbers openly and honestly on all sides, rather than hampering and hurting our citizens and the workforce and labor.
Rich writes on Facebook, in that we are getting to International Darwin Day, February 12th, how about a science question such as, do our guests believe in evolution? I'm not going to ask either of you that, but I will ask you, Pat, and then Katrina, do you believe the scientific consensus that climate change or global warming is a serious problem largely attributable to human activity?
I do believe in climate change. I guess I could say I'm agnostic on the elevation caused extremely by man and humans, especially when you do some research on sunspots and the lack of them and the activity that goes on, and if you look at the patterns. But, you know, in the same sense, when I look at the data and get on and see if we take the CO2 out totally and you do the little graphs, we would only change the temperature 0.14 by the end of this century. Does that mean that we hamper people with high costs and energy and jobs for that savings?
Katrina Shankland, do you believe that climate change is a serious problem and it's largely attributed to human activity?
I absolutely believe it, but I shouldn't have to believe it because it should be accepted by everyone. It shouldn't be a political thought. I think that we need to take a serious look at taking action soon, or the fate of, you know, our national security and economic security will really be disastrous. So we absolutely need to accept the overwhelming consensus of scientists across the world.
Doug writes on Facebook, currently a lot of people work in the solar industry. Solar power continues to have high approval ratings across the political spectrum. Republican governors in Michigan and Illinois have recently signed legislation to increase solar and clean energy. Meanwhile, Wisconsin has the highest electric costs in the Midwest, has no fossil fuel resources, and sends nearly $1 billion out of state annually for coal. What is your plan to grow solar and clean energy in Wisconsin? Pat Snyder.
Well, I think the free market will take care of that. I would be all for people to invest in the way the solar, especially with the new shingles they have that you can put right into the side of your home. I'm all for it. And if it means federal, I think federal tax breaks for incentives to that nature, I'd be for it. The one thing that I'm always bothered with a little bit is taxpayers subsidizing something that the free market might not totally grasp and want to jump into. But I would never do anything to hamper its growth.
Should we be doing something to encourage its growth, Katrina Shanklin?
Absolutely. We send, as taxpayers, over $12 billion out of our state every year to meet our state's energy demands. A lot of it comes from out west, like Wyoming, for example, where we're sending our money. We need to bring clean energy dollars home and our energy dollars as a whole home. I have several bills to do this. I have a manufacturing grant and loan program for renewable energy jobs to create them and sustain them. I have a bill to ensure that we actually move the ball forward on investing in renewable energy, because right now our utilities are essentially stagnant in terms of investing. And so it would require them to incrementally over time increase their investments, which some of them are already doing in other states, I should say, like Minnesota. And I also have bills for energy storage and innovation on clean energy, because they are not only well-paying jobs, these are jobs that can't be outsourced. You can't outsource a wind farm maintenance job, and they're well-paying and sustainable. So we need to invest in these kind of jobs in our future.
Let's go back to the governor's State of the State address. One of the things he talked about was the Affordable Care Act, which is in the process of being repealed, and his decision to not take the Medicaid expansion money from the federal government. We're going to listen to the governor and then an opposing view from John Peacock of the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families.
A few years ago, some argued that we should take the Obamacare Medicaid expansion money. In turn, I warned that it would come back to hurt Wisconsin taxpayers. What happened in Minnesota this past year suggests we were right. Late last year, health insurance premiums there increased by as much as 67%. The governor of Minnesota declared the Affordable Care Act is no longer affordable. And just last week, he actually called on the legislature to spend $313 million to buy down health insurance premiums, putting Minnesota taxpayers on the hook. In contrast, we have a modest surplus in Medicaid while covering everyone living in poverty.
Repealing the Affordable Care Act would hurt almost everyone in Wisconsin, because directly or indirectly, nearly everyone in this state is benefiting from some part of it. The Urban Institute recently put out a report estimating that there'd be about 47,000 additional kids who become uninsured as a result of repeal, and 63,000 additional parents. They estimated that the number of insured people in the state would more than double, from about 300,000 now to more than 600,000.
That's John Peacock of the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families, recorded on Upfront with Mike Goucher. Pat, Peacock says if the Affordable Care Act is repealed, 600,000 people in Wisconsin are going to be without insurance. Do you buy that? And if the statistic is accurate, does the state have any plans for dealing with it?
Well, we're hoping with this new administration that the one thing the president has said is to take federalism out of things like Medicaid. And my concerns, and I hope that Congressman Duffy, along with Speaker Ryan, fight for Wisconsin to make sure we get the Medicaid expansion that would be coming. Because we didn't take the Medicaid expansion, I hope that doesn't hurt us in the amount we get in a block grant. So that's why I want them to be fighting for that.
So you weren't opposed to them taking the Medicaid expansion, not taking it initially, but you're hoping that we get Medicaid expansion
later?
No, I
think
later.
The governor did the right thing.
That's,
I mean,
right.
Everyone was insured at 100% poverty, and the rest, you know, got onto the Affordable Care Act. And I think the ones that would fall off would probably come back into the Badger Care. What I'm saying is, because we didn't take the expansion like Minnesota did, if they send block grants out, I hope that doesn't penalize us, thinking like, well, you know, this had $700 billion. You only took $400 billion, so you're only going to get $400 billion.
May be Medicaid money, additional Medicaid money coming to us.
There very well should be. So that would take a lot of it. Is going to depend on what happens with the federal government and what they come up with their new plan.
Katrina Shanklin?
Well, first of all, I think it's ironic that the Republicans in Madison are suddenly interested in Medicaid money when for many, many years we had millions, if not billions of dollars of Medicaid money that they chose not to accept. The federal poverty level for one person is 11,770 people. The governor kicked 57,000 people off who made above $11,770, but around $12,000, $13,000, $14,000 a year, not much. He forced them into the exchanges, which we did not create. The federal government did. And now they're saying, well, they can just go on Badger Care. Badger Care is Medicaid. So are Republicans going to accept more Medicaid money from the federal government after stonewalling for 6 years? Is that's what's going to happen? Let's be clear. Block grants pick winners and losers. Block grants do not serve everyone. What's going to happen to the tens of thousands of people in Wisconsin who are kicked off Badger Care Plus, forced into the exchanges? Tens of thousands of them did not ever get coverage as far as the state knows. And now we're going to tell them to go on Badger Care. Will there be enough Medicaid money from the federal government in the form of a block grant for it? I question that. But on top of that, why are people changing access to health care at a time when health care is so important for most people? It's very scary to me that we're having this debate when there's no real plan to replace the Affordable Care Act.
I'll just add something that would come with us getting a block grant from Medicaid will hopefully be the ability to, and something I campaigned on, stop this cliff of entitlement or public assistance. When you get to a certain salary, that you lose everything. Hopefully with this, something like this coming in Medicaid, it would take the federal waivers off, that we would be able to come in and say, okay, you hit the 40,000 mark, but instead of losing everything, now it gradually goes down, so you have incentive to keep working and take the promotions in your job, get increased. Our goal is to get them to feel the best they can be to reach their goals, but not pull the rug out from under them when they hit a certain income level.
Well, let's squeeze one more phone call in. Marcus is on line one with a question, I believe, about medical marijuana. Marcus?
Yes, thanks for taking my call. It stems back to Katrina's first thing about minds changing, and I believe Democrats have a piece of legislation floating around looking for co-sponsors for the introduction of a medical marijuana law. I think the deadline's today. But anyways, there's a strong favorable public opinion on getting Madison to pass the meaningful medical marijuana law and not just some CBD bill that they've been fighting for 2 years, and it's just a feel-good bill at this point. So I guess two questions. One is, what are your thoughts on medical marijuana? And two, what do you have to say to the families who become medical refugees and seeking relief for themselves or their children to states that have access to medical marijuana?
All right. Thank you so much. And we've only got 30 seconds for each of your answers. Katrina, you go first.
I strongly support access to medical marijuana. This is the third session in a row that I am sponsoring that bill. And in addition, the authors also introduced a medical marijuana advisory referendum, which I encourage everyone to ask their legislators to sponsor. Even if they're opposed to it, they should support an advisory referendum so that they can get their constituents' views heard. This is our obligation as a society to ensure people aren't in pain. We need to do this.
Pat Snyder?
With Melissa Dotter and the Alcohol and Other Drugs Coalition strongly going against the medical marijuana, Colorado, California, the other states started with this, and it escalated into legalization. And if you really look truly at what's happened to Colorado, I think it's a step. As far as the CBD oil, I do want to see relief for epilepsy and others, so I'd have to see the bill.
All right, very good. Unfortunately, my two wonderful guests, we are completely out of time. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great, Glenn. Thanks, Christine.
Yeah, thank you.
We want to thank today's guest, Democratic Assemblywoman Katrina Shankland of the 71st Assembly District in Stevens Point and Republican Assemblyman Pat Snyder of the 85th Assembly District in Wausau. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer. Thanks to our on-air producer, Janice Schleiss. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Loxley, The Music Connection, and the University of Wisconsin Symphonic Band. Next week on Route 51, we'll have a reporter's roundtable to talk about local, state, and national issues and the state of the news media in 2017. If you missed part of this program, it will be rebroadcast in its entirety Friday evening at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. It can also be downloaded at wpr.org/route51. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.